up to the ages of 10 or 12. But this corner was also attractive to youth at a later stage, and a young man not less than 24 was staring into the same shop window. To him also, the shop was of fiery charm, but this attraction was not wholly to be explained by chocolates, which, however, he was far from despising. He was a tall, burly, red-haired young man, with a resolute face but a listless manner. He carried under his arm a flat gray portfolio of black and white sketches, which he had sold with more or less success to publishers, ever since his uncle, who was an admiral, had disinherited him for socialism because of a lecture which he had delivered against that economic theory. His name was John Turnbull Angus. Entering at last, he walked through the confectioner's shop to the back room, which was a sort of pastry cook restaurant, merely raising his hat to the young lady who was serving there. She was a dark, elegant, alert girl in black, with a high color and very quick dark eyes, and after the ordinary interval, she followed him into the inner room to take his order. His order was evidently a usual one. "I want, please," he said with precision, "one halfpenny bun and a small cup of black coffee." An instant before the girl could turn away, he added, "Also, I want you to marry me." The young lady of the shop stiffened suddenly and said, "Those are jokes I don't allow." The red-haired young man lifted gray eyes of an unexpected gravity. "Really and truly," he said, "it's as serious as the halfpenny bun. It is expensive like the bun, one pays for it. It is indigestible like the bun, it hurts." The dark young lady had never taken her eyes off him, but seemed to be studying him with almost tragic exactitude. At the end of her scrutiny, she had something like the shadow of a smile, and she sat down in a chair. "Don't you think," observed Angus absently, "that it's rather cruel to eat these halfpenny buns? They might grow up into penny buns. I shall give up these brutal sports when we are married." The dark young lady rose from her chair and walked to the window, evidently in a state of strong but not unsympathetic cogitation. When at last she swung around, with an air of resolution, she was bewildered to observe that the young man was carefully laying out on the table various objects from the shop window. They included a pyramid of highly colored sweets, several plates of sandwiches, and the two decanters containing that mysterious port and sherry which are peculiar to pastry cooks. In the middle of the neat arrangement, he had carefully let down the enormous load of white sugared cake which had been the huge ornament of the window. "What on earth are you doing?" she asked. "Duty, my dear Laura," he began. "Oh, for the Lord's sake, stop a minute," she cried, "and don't talk to me in that way. I mean, what is all that? A ceremonial meal, Miss Hope. And what is that?" she asked impatiently, pointing to the mountain of sugar. "The wedding cake, Mrs. Angus," he said. The girl marched to that article, removed it with some clatter, and put it back in the shop window. She then returned and, putting her elegant elbows on the table, regarding the young man not unfavorably but with some considerable exasperation. "You don't give me any time to think," she said. "I'm not such a fool," he answered. That's my Christian humility." She was still looking at him, but she had grown considerably graver behind the smile. "Mr. Angus," she said steadily, "before there is a minute more of this nonsense, I must tell you something about myself as shortly as I can." "Delighted," replied Angus gravely. "You might tell me something about myself, too, while you're about it." "Oh, do hold your tongue and listen," she said. "It's nothing that I'm ashamed of, and it isn't even anything that I'm specially sorry about. But what would you say if there was something that is no business of mine and yet is my nightmare?" "In that case," said the man seriously, "I should suggest that you bring back the cake." "Well, you must listen to the story first," said Laura persistently. "To begin with, I must tell you that my father owned the inn called the Red Fish at Ludbury, and I used to serve people in the bar. I have often wondered," he said, "why there was a kind of a Christian air about this one confectioner's shop." Ludbury is a sleepy, grassy little hole in the eastern counties, and the only kind of people who ever came to the Red Fish were occasional commercial travelers, and for the rest, the most awful people you can see, only you've never seen them. I mean little loungy men who had just